you a high performer, obsessed with growth, and looking for an edge? Welcome to Mind Body Peak Performance. Together, we'll discover underground secrets to unlocking the full potential of your mind, body, and spirit. We'll learn from some of the world's leading minds, from ancient wisdom to cutting-edge tools and everything in between. This is your host, Nick Urban. Enjoy the episode. Welcome back to the show with your host, Nick Urban. With all the recent supply chain issues and many experts predicting that the next world war will be fought over water, it's a good time to pay attention to it. And we first dug into it with Isabel Friend back on episode 50. And today, we're hearing from a clinician on the front lines that battles with hydration every single day. Her name is Dr. Dana Cohen. Dr. Cohen has helped thousands of patients find relief from a variety of health problems using the principles of integrative and functional medicine. Back in 1998, she was certified by the American Board of Internal Medicine. She served on the board of ACAM, the leading voice of integrative medicine, for 4 years. She is currently an advisor to the board of directors and on the education committee. She has served as the program director for the yearly conferences, which train more than 1,500 master-level healthcare providers. She's a founding member on the Scientific Advisory Board for the Organic and Natural Health Association. She's also on the Scientific Advisory Board of Cure Hydration and the Health and Wellness Advisor for Essentia Water. Today, we're talking all about hydration. And no, the answer isn't just drinking more and more water, following the gallon challenge, or anything along those lines. Luckily, it's a lot simpler, but that doesn't necessarily mean easy. If this kind of thing is interesting to you, I suggest you go to Amazon or your local bookstore and pick up a copy of her book, Quench. And like always, everything we discuss will be in the show notes, which you can find at mindbodypeak.com/60. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, Dr. Dana Cohen. Dr. Cohen, welcome to Mind Body Peak Performance.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. Today, I'd love to talk about the intricacies of water and hydration and how you're using it and working with patients in practice.
Great. Perfect. Love it.
So for the people who aren't familiar with you, can you give us a little bit about your backstory? How did you become interested in hydration to begin with?
So I am a medical doctor, internal medicine. I've been in private practice for over 24 years. And always, though, integrative medicine or functional medicine or complementary and alternative medicine, whatever the name du jour is. And that's how I started right out of residency. I worked with Dr. Atkins. So nutrition is always a huge part of my practice. Lifestyle, nutrition, hydration has always been a part of my practice as well. I got involved in writing the book because, truthfully, I've always known I needed to write a book in order to have some kind of platform in this field, and couldn't find my book. Didn't know what I wanted to be on. I do a lot of hormones. I do a lot of thyroid. I didn't really want to write another book on that, like where you have to go see the doctor, get blood work and get a prescription, although there's a lot to be said about it. I just didn't see my book in there. So my co-author came to see me one day and she was telling me about the work of Dr. Gerald Pollack, who's a world-renowned water researcher, and she's blowing my mind. And I was like, Gina, I said, do you want to write this book with me? This is my book. This is what it is. And she said, yeah, let's do it. And so that was, gosh, a while ago now, probably 6 years ago that we embarked on that journey. And the truth is, I honestly really believe that hydration, learning how to hydrate, is the single most important thing you could do to treat and prevent chronic disease. Hands down. Mm-hmm. Before you start on any nutrition program, exercise program, lifestyle program, start with hydration.
And in theory, it should be incredibly easy to start with because you don't have to restrict your food choices. You don't have to go suffer through long workouts. You don't have to radically change your routine. It's just a simple addition.
Yes. Yes. Which I love. That is what I'm all about. Yeah. You know, simple, doable, not eliminating anything, but you know, it's always an addition. It is quite simple. It's the one thing though that I'm a stickler about, meaning I tell people, I do put people on nutrition programs, and most of the time I'm okay with like that 80-20 rule. Give me 80% of the time, most of the time, unless they have celiac disease or something, you know. With hydration, I ask them to be on top of it 100% of the time. Like, just keep it in the forefront of your mind. Stay on top of it day in, day out, hour by hour, day by day.
And I know that can be very hard for people in itself. And we'll talk about some of your tips and strategies and also your book. I read that and it radically changed the way I look at hydration, more than just water, the foods I eat even, and the lifestyle factors. But before we cover this whole world, let's do a warm up. And so far today, what unusual or non-negotiables have you done for your health and performance?
Unusual stuff that I've done for my health. You know, I've done all kinds of things. I like to experiment on myself first before I would ever even think of taking it on. So I've definitely done some, like, you know, different IV things, like IV NAD, IV ozone, rectal ozone. You know, there's definitely like some, I tend to play around with, you know, things like that. Lots of energy work. So sort of what people would think were woo-woo stuff. Seen lots of energy healers. I keep a glass of water at my bedside. I do it the night before. It sits there overnight. And first thing in the morning, I drink it down. There's not a lot that's non-negotiable, because I want to say, like, I was, you know, my first thing that comes to my mind is I meditate. But the truth is I go through periods where I don't, you know, and that's not great. I always know when I feel better, when I do better as far as meditation and that kind of thing. And I also go through different types of meditation. I'll chant, do like Namyoho Renge Kyo, or I'll do TM. I learn TM, or I'll just do Sam Harris's app, you know? So I go through different things. And then there's times where I don't do anything. There's times where I'm like a 2-year-old and I'm like, I'm not going to do any self-help. And I feel it, I pay for it. I know it, you know? So until then that switch gets turned on again and you go back to doing what you know feels best. So not a whole lot of non-negotiables. I try to have a green smoothie every single day. There are some days where I will not like go get a crappy green smoothie from a place that I know doesn't have good fruits and stuff because I can't get to it. I'm actually incredibly interested in psychedelics and that kind of thing. We're not there yet from like a medical standpoint. It's in research phase, but everybody's talking about it. And I've always been interested since the, you know, the 80s. I've been really sort of looking at books and ideas, and I'm so happy that there's a resurgence of it now.
Yeah. And what you were saying a second ago about not having any hard routines that you can't break, that's something that I've become more interested in, because as you go along and you notice that, okay, I'm loathing this meditation in the morning, like I can't wait to get past that in my day, is it really doing any benefit if you're hating the entire process? Maybe it's best to listen to your gut and intuition and take a break.
I love that. And you know, what you just said though made me think of something. I really focus more on breaking bad habits, like getting rid of bad habits rather than sticking, you know, to regimens. You know, I know, I will say it right now, my greatest achievement in my life is quitting smoking, which I did many years ago.
Wow.
And to this day, I am so freaking proud of myself for that. You know, like I know what a big deal that was for me. I was a smoker since I was really young. I was probably 14 when I started smoking cigarettes. And, I smoked a lot. I was like one of two people in medical school. We'd be like smoking cigarettes. I was even, I worked for Dr. Atkins. When I first started working for Dr. Atkins, I would leave, go to lunch break, hide, making sure like no patients would see me. And it was horrible. It was horrible to my self-esteem, you know, let alone whatever, but that quitting smoking, you know, so I like to focus more on quitting bad habits than sticking to such regimented, you know, being playful, having joy, looking at those kind of things in our lives, I think are so much more important. than being so regimented in, you know, in a diet or something. I will say though, if somebody's really sick, then there's, you know, there's a difference there. Like, I'm pretty healthy, so.
The context definitely matters.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's shift gears and to dive into the subject of hydration. So now that we've thrown this word around a bunch and you've mentioned that hydration isn't just drinking more water, that helps, but that's not the end all be all of hydration. How do you define it, and why should I care about being hydrated if I'm not necessarily at the age yet where I am worried about chronic disease?
Let's start with defining what subclinical dehydration is, okay? Subclinical or hypohydration or low-grade dehydration. This is a term that is really difficult to measure. All right, there's no such measurement. I wish I had a simple finger stick I could do and say, oh, you're subclinically dehydrated. It doesn't exist. We know what overt dehydration looks like. Somebody's had, you know, vomiting all day long. Their eyes are rolling back in their head. They need to go to the emergency room and get IV fluids. This subclinical low-grade dehydration happens to us all of the time, day in, day out. And it's just a little bit of not keeping up with your hydration. You're subclinically dehydrated. So what does that, look like? You have headaches. You have brain fog. You lose cognition at being only 2% dehydrated. Your cognitive abilities are starting to change, let alone the things like constipation and dry skin and making you look older and muscle aches and joint aches. The fatigue, afternoon fatigue. Think about how many times people go to grab food or sugar thinking, oh, my blood sugar is dropping, when more often than not, you're subclinically dehydrated. Start with hydration first. But the thing is, you need to stay on top of it. So you need to you need to stave it off before it happens. So that's, I mean, that is the key. And it's those daily insults of this low-grade dehydration that add up over time and contribute to things like diabetes and Alzheimer's and certain cancers and other chronic diseases, autoimmune disease, those kind of things.
You said a number a second ago, you said 2% dehydration. What would that translate? What's a reference I can use to determine if I'm ever getting to that level, or how do I know how dehydrated I am as a ballpark?
I think the best sort of thing that I've got for you is we are meant to urinate every 2 or 3 hours while we're awake, right? So if you're not getting up to pee every 2 or 3 hours, you're not hydrating enough. So that's the best thing that we can do. Output is the most important thing. You can look at the color of your urine. It's a good measure. It's not great. Meaning if we have B vitamins, it's going to be yellow to begin with. But they've also done studies that people who don't even take those things, the color of your urine is not a perfect thing. But the truth is, you do know when you wake up in the morning and you look at your pee, it's way more concentrated because you've been overnight concentrating your urine. So it's a good guideline. As far as the 8 glasses a day, doesn't work. Everybody's different. If you're sweating more, if you're an athlete, so it's hard to know. You have to live in your body. You have to look and know what it feels like to feel perfectly hydrated and then stay on top of that. Does that answer the question? Was that what you were asking me?
Yeah. And about sleeping and dehydration, how does that work? How much water do we actually lose while we're asleep?
Well, we don't lose a lot when we're sleeping, right? Because we're concentrating it, it's all staying there. But the interesting thing is that we do most of our detoxification when we're asleep. When we are naturally asleep, our body is detoxing away. Literally, all those pathways are moving, and so how do we then get rid of those toxins? There's only 3 ways we get rid of toxins: we pee it out, we poop it out, and we sweat it out, right? So when you wake up in the morning, then you're peeing all those toxins overnight. But we're not, you know, we're also not replacing anything overnight while we're sleeping too, but we actually don't lose a lot. I mean, unless you're sweating we are sweating actually at night. A lot of people do sweat. So that is one way we're losing it, but it's also, sorry to say, it's so hard to measure, you know, but that's, that whole sleep and detoxification is a really important point because one of the reasons why you need to stay on top of your hydration. And it may be important to hydrate a little bit better throughout the day so that you're not up peeing overnight, but staying on top of that overnight. Mm.
Yeah. And is it true that if you don't drink water in the morning, then your body is in starvation mode and it thinks there's a famine and you're more likely to hold on to fat and elevate stress hormones?
I don't know if it's true. I've not read any studies about like starvation mode if you don't drink any water. Desert people hydrate by front loading their water. So that's that early morning, first thing in the morning, soaking your organs, wetting everything. That's how desert people do it. I think that's how I have now years of experience behind me and saying, like, I'll give you an example. A lot of my my Bikram yoga people, right? So these are people who do a ton of yoga. They're sweating all day. They're in heat. And they always say to me, I can't satiate. I can't quench my thirst. And I had them switch it up. So try front loading your water and then doing some of the other things that we'll talk about over time, you know, in this, doing some of the other things, but front loading their water, they're able to satiate their thirst better. The way to answer that is people who say, I drink water all day long. I can't quench my thirst. You know, try front loading your water. So what that means is I say anywhere from 8 to 16 ounces first thing in the morning. I put a little sea salt in there. So like a full spectrum, full mineral salt with a little squeeze of lemon for some extra minerals. So that's going to help hold on to that water a little bit better from a cellular standpoint. Suck it down. And then most people will find that their thirst is better satiated throughout the day, better quenched.
Yeah. That's exactly what I do. And I'll add some trace minerals to mine as well. Plus, it makes compliance that much easier. It's easy when it's built in your routine. You wake up, you have the water. But if you try and add it in at some point throughout the day, it's much harder to be consistent with the habit.
It's a simple fix. You know, there are days, even now, there are days that I'll sit at my desk and forget to drink water all day long or forget to, you know, but I eat pretty well. I eat very well. I eat a lot of plants. I eat a lot of vegetables. I'm typically okay. And there is research that some people, once again, some people, I just want to say, not everybody, only needs one glass of water a day.
Wow.
You know, it depends on the quality of the water they're drinking, what else they're doing. You know, there's all kinds of reasons behind that, but we all don't need so much, you know, drinking water. Mm. Some people do, some people don't. But that one glass of water first thing in the morning, one and done, you know, you're starting your day off right.
And I noticed from personal experience that when I had the glass of water in the morning, the ravenous hunger that I used to have back in my days of big stacks of pancakes for first thing in the morning for breakfast, that hunger completely dissipated and I actually was able to go much later into the day without eating and still feeling good and not having the same blood sugar crash that I'd otherwise have.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely a known thing. So there was a study that we talk about in the book. So people who are dieting, you know, you drink a glass of water before every meal. So maybe 20 minutes before every meal will lose more weight than people who don't. Now, is it because they're not eating as much because they're not feeling as hungry or because they're more hydrated? We don't know why, but that's a definite known thing. And we also know that when you hydrate better, you're not as hungry.
What's the optimal time? 30 minutes before a meal?
I think, yeah, 20, 30 minutes before a meal. There's, you know, there's the concern. A lot of people say, it's going to dilute your digestive enzymes when you eat. I don't think there's a whole lot of research behind that, but, but yeah, so 20, 30 minutes before your meals, shouldn't affect that if it were to anyway.
Speaking of dilution, that makes me think of, wearing a continuous glucose monitor. And if you're dehydrated, I noticed in my own data that I had bigger spikes and valleys in my blood glucose data.
Absolutely. There is real physiology behind why that happens anyway. So dehydration absolutely spikes blood sugar.
When that happens, it also leads to changes in energy and more fatigue. It makes weight loss harder. So there's a lot of downstream consequences of that as well.
Yeah, it's a vicious cycle. So once again, first, before you start any nutrition diet program, start hydrating first. And before you think your blood sugar's dropping in the afternoon and reaching for a candy bar or, you know, a food, hydrate first and then see.
Tell me about the longevity / anti-aging and beauty benefits of proper hydration.
It's so simple. Plumping, skin, every esthetician knows that you can pile on the creams and the moisturizers, but if you're dehydrated from within, nothing is going to help you. You need to hydrate from within first. I mean, that is everything. And that's another thing, that morning water, I hear this all the time, like, wow, my skin is glowing. You know, so for so many reasons too, detoxification, when you're hydrating better, you're getting rid of toxins better. It just makes sense and simple. And yeah, so before you start doing Fraxel and you're peeling off the skin on your face, start here. And it's going to make anything that you do work better then, you know.
It's the same thing for the other areas we mentioned that hydration impacts, like cognition. Instead of popping that nootropic supplement, perhaps try hydrating first, and you might notice you don't need it. And if you do need it, it'll be more effective. Same with pre-workouts and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. We just need to be reminded of it. And it's simple, it's easy. And I'm here to just sort of say, like, yeah, like it's not biohacking. and while I'm interested in it, this is my thing. This is just my easy thing that we can all do and make a huge difference in all of our lives. Mm-hmm. You know,
like you were saying, it's something that every person has heard. I think you'd be hard pressed to find a single person in the modern world that doesn't know that hydration is important, but at the same time, it's very hard to be consistent and to maintain optimal hydration. What are some of the factors that are making it so challenging for us?
People think they have to drink so much water, number one, and that's not necessarily true. I do want to just take a second and talk about Dr. Pollack's work. Dr. Gerald Pollack, who's the world-renowned water researcher based out of University of Washington in Seattle, he has discovered that there's another phase of water. He calls it easy water. We call it in the book gel water or structured water. And the properties of this water are fascinating, right? So they hold energy much like a battery. It holds energy much like a battery. And it has to do with the way that those molecules, those water molecules, H2O, are layering upon each other. And it's in that layering that they hold on to energy. And it's believed that it's in that form is what's found in nature. So think about cactus plants. You know, you open an aloe leaf and there's gel water flowing out. Now, that's not only water. That gel is not literally only, there's other substances in there, but it is loaded with this structured or gel water. So it's believed that that's how it's found in nature, but it's also believed that that's how it's found within our cells. So the idea of ways to create more water in our bodies are, number one, we need some water. We need things like sunlight. We need movement is a hydrating act, which we'll talk about. We need electrolytes. We need fiber. These are all these things that help hold on to that water better, we need fats, by the way, and helps it get into our healthy cells better. So it's not necessarily, once again, it's not necessarily about drinking water, so much water. It's about eating your water and doing all these other things. But the other part of that equation is that we live in ever more dehydrating environments. You know, we live in desert environments, and yet we're indoors. Fluorescent lighting sucks all the hydration out of the air. Air conditioning, heating. It's interesting. I live in New York, and I always say this, like, winter is way more dehydrating in New York than summer. You know, everybody's talking about summer. You got to get out there because it's so hot. Get your, you know, winter in New York. I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't wake up in the summer with chapped, cracked lips that I used to in winter in my old apartments that had the radiator heating. It's horrible. So our environments, our food, processed food is sucking all the hydration out of us. Medications, our cell phones, electronics, all that stuff. We live, you know, 5G, we don't know what that's doing to our hydration. We don't know. And it surrounds, we have no control over it. So we're living in ever more dehydrating environments that we need to stay on top of.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so at this point, listeners know to drink some water first thing in the morning. That can help for a variety of reasons that we just mentioned. And then they know some of the factors in their lifestyles that can be depleting them. What are some of the other things you can do? You mentioned a couple in passing, such as fats and fiber and movement and light. How does this all work? How do you integrate this into your lifestyle?
Okay, so light is easy. We all need to get some sunlight, period. You know, we need to get outside, expose our shoulders if we can, our arms, our legs, get some sunlight when you can. I mean, it's hard. I live up in New York in the wintertime. It's terrible. But exposure to sun, we all know we feel better, we do better when we do that. Okay, so that's the truth is, though, really any light, it's reflected off of us. And based on the work of Dr. Pollack, it does create more gel water or structured water within our cells. UV light happens to be better. So if you can't, you might want to do some like ultraviolet saunas, those kind of things are really good for us. What else can we do? Eating our water. Let's talk about just eating our water. This is really simple. People, we need to get more vegetables in our diet. God, I worked for Dr. Atkins. I come from, you know, a keto background, but we definitely need to add more vegetables to our diet. So a plant-centric diet, easy way to do it is how about making two or three vegetables with whatever your protein is for dinner? You know, make it a rule to have a side salad with lunch and dinner, you know, easy stuff. Pretty unhealthy people, you give them one green smoothie a day, it's life-changing for them. You know, so you're getting such an incredible nutrition boost. And let me define a green smoothie. It's blended greens with water, with then whatever else you want to put in there. You can put some berries, you can put apple, ginger, lemon, whatever you want to do to add to that to make it delicious for yourself. Now, I'm not talking about protein powder and yogurt. That becomes a meal, right? A green smoothie a day, you add that to somebody's diet in the middle of the day, their life is going to change from a hydration standpoint, from a nutrition standpoint. Really powerful, easy tool. Can be expensive. It doesn't have to be. I mean, if you're going to go out and buy them, but you get a blender at home, it's easy.
Are you not a fan of adding protein and other things into the smoothie?
I'm not a fan, but you know, it becomes it then becomes a meal. Right. So then we're talking, you know, well, what kind of protein, what, it becomes a plan, right? Yeah. So there's a place for that. I also want to say, I want to differentiate it from juicing, right? Juicing is when you're pressing the vegetables and pulling out the juice, no fiber, no nothing gets in there. So if you want to do it as a meal and add protein powder, add a nut milk or something like that, great. I think for simplicity, when I talk on these things and just trying to change somebody's life, a green smoothie with just in addition to whatever you're doing as your diet is gonna make an impact.
And a little tip that I discovered from doing this many times is that if you add a bunch of veggies and you blend it up and it's really fibrous and not that appealing, if you add an avocado to it, it really smooths it out. And if it sits for 5 minutes or something, the fiber doesn't separate from the water and you don't have this disgusting mixture.
Yeah. Yeah. God knows. I mean, I love making smoothies. It's really fun for me. I think I like to play around. I like to like fancy myself a chef, and I'm not. Just on what you're saying, there's oftentimes I really like it's bad. And I'm like, I'm just hold it down and suck it down. I know it's doing good for me. You know, sometimes you miss. But it's fun. You know, you're like a little kid when you used to make concoctions when you were younger. So have fun with it, play around with it, mix it up, get, you know, what I do is Misfits Market. Are you familiar with them?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, they send me, or you can get a CSA where you don't know what they're going to send to you. Right. So get even better. I want to say like a local CSA where they'll send you, you know, whatever the week's vegetables are, and then you have to play with them. You have to make them. I want to say, if that's the one thing that people take away today, that is huge, right? So contribute to your local CSA, try it for the summer. So important in this environment, in this, you know, for our earth.
CSA is a great tip. I have used Misfits Market. I've used Imperfect. I wish that the time from harvest to consumption was a little faster. And I also am about to go to our local farmers market for the first time. So I'm excited for that. But the CSA is a great tip.
Yeah. You don't know what you're getting. And yeah. Then you got to kind of play around with the ingredients, make something new. It's fun. I love to sort of discover. And like I said, there, I'm no chef and I often miss, and it's still okay. It's still, you know, yeah.
There's a stat, and I'm going to butcher this, but it's something like the average American only eats 8 different items of produce throughout their lifetime. So if you're using a CSA that's constantly shipping you new stuff to try, yeah. It forces you to be creative, and it also adds needed diversity to your diet.
I love it. You know, there was recently, maybe a year or two ago, a big study that came out that talked about people who eat over 30 different plants a week have the most diverse microbiomes, and it's the most healthiest thing you can do. That is what I'm really talking a lot about now. So eating, you know, we talk about eating the rainbow, but it includes, you know, it's not just vegetables and fruits, it's grains and seeds, anything, you know, plant-based. So 30 different, and it sounds like, oh my God, that's so difficult every week. It's actually really not when you take all of those things into consideration. And mixing it up. But yeah, that's a great way to, one great way to do it is get a CSA, think about what other seeds you're putting in there. Spices also is contributing to that too. Play around with spices. Hydration is the most important, is so important to me, but I'm so happy that we're talking about this because it's really exciting. It's important. Yeah, I love those tips. I hope people make use of it.
Yeah, I'm just in the process of moving now, and I was unpacking my stuff and I pulled out my blender and I was thinking back to this thing wasn't always as important in my life as it is now, because now I just take a bunch of different vegetables, some fruit, some spices, and I combine that all into there. And it's a great hack to getting a ton of different variety in your diet without having to cook up 25 different things and portion it and suffer through a bunch of bad experiments.
And think about people who hate to eat salads and vegetables.
Yes.
Like, you know, that's a great way to just like say, all right, it has to be done. I just, you know, there's no, you know, so mix it with some fruit, make it taste better, lemon, you know, ginger, even if you like that, spices, you could throw some spices in there. You can make it medicinal, even like think about some herbs that you want to play around with. You know, curcumin is, everybody talks about curcumin and taking supplements of curcumin, just cooking with curcumin or using turmeric, which, you know, is beneficial to your health. It's not like, you know, cinnamon too, but cinnamon, you really need more concentrated doses to really affect blood sugar. But there are some, just getting those herbs in there, let alone what it's doing for your microbiome and your gut, there are some real medicinal benefits. So you could become like an apothecary.
Yeah. And with turmeric, there's also turmerosaccharides that if you take a curcumin supplement, you're not getting. And there's a lot of constituents that we don't yet know the value of, but we will one day, and taking an isolate won't be as effective for supporting overall health.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Always start with food. You know, I prescribe a ton of supplements, but the truth is, like, I know better than anybody. And I tell my patients all the time, we have to start with food. And then, you know, over time, I'm always looking to pull them off. You know, I'm not the person that just keeps piling on, but if somebody's not feeling good, there are things, there's benefit. I know clinically there's benefit for people, and we can measure levels and sort of look at all those things. And then over time, if they're eating better and they're feeling better, we pull them off of those supplements. And yeah.
Dr. Cohen, every January, I will spend those 4 weeks doing a metabolic reset so I can establish some metabolic flexibility. And I'll do something like keto or even carnivore I did last time for a month. And there's people on either side of it. Some say that carnivore is the best thing that ever happened. Some say that it's terrible for all different aspects of health. What do you see around carnivore and those who completely abstain from fruits and vegetables and hydration?
Yeah, it scares me. I have to be honest with you. I too have seen people who swear by it, and they're in unbelievable shape. It terrifies the hell out of me that they're not eating any vegetable, you know, nothing. I will say from a hydration standpoint, I can speak more on keto because I've been prescribing a keto diet for so many years. If somebody comes in and their blood sugar's, you know, 250, 300, they're going on a keto diet. We need to get their blood sugar in control, that kind of thing. But I know, I also know better than anybody. I have 25 years of putting people on a ketogenic diet that, and I'm making this number up, 99% of the time, the weight comes back on. You know, I've seen it over and over again. It doesn't work long term. Yeah. I literally made up that 99% number, so people don't scream at me. You know, but I've seen it, you know, time and time again. Yeah, the weight comes off and then it comes back on. We need to find that cycling. What is the right cycling in and out of keto? But going back to what I was going to say about hydration and keto, let me just say one thing before I say what I'm going to say. I often say that if you like twisted my arm and you had to get a number of what's the right amount of water to drink, I would say, well, the best thing I have is half your weight in ounces. If you weigh 200 pounds, you want to drink 100 ounces of water.
Yep.
It's still not great, you know, because it doesn't take into account how much somebody's sweating, how big they are, blah, blah, blah. I mean, they're just taking me how big they are, but how much they're sweating, how active they are.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of things that they don't take into account. So with that in mind, though, a ketogenic diet is a diuretic. It's a natural diuretic. If you've ever gone on a diet, you know, so I would say then they want to do 75% of their weight in pounds and ounces if they're on a ketogenic diet. I would assume with the carnivore diet also, you need to drink a lot more water.
Yeah.
Like you said, I love the idea of a reset. Like, gosh, over COVID, I was horrible, you know, and even like I did a 3-day vegan food delivery service. And it was just to get in my head. Mm. You know, it was just, that's the other thing. Some people do well on a vegan diet. I think most people don't. Or many people don't. Let me say it that way too.
Yeah.
Now, granted, I don't really know that for sure either because I have a skewed population, right? I have people coming to see me because they're not feeling well. They're going to the doctor. So
part of my morning routine is to drink my big glass of water and then go out on a walk in light. So I'm getting the water, I'm getting the light, and I'm also moving. You mentioned earlier there's a link between movement and hydration.
Absolutely. Yeah. So a few years ago, there was a very brilliant researcher. His last name was Dr. Guimberto. He's a French, I believe he was a plastic surgeon. And prior to him doing this, it had never been studied before. And basically, he took a camera and put it under the skin of a living person and studied fascia. Fascia is the connective tissue that surrounds every cell, every organ. It is this webbing. It's now believed to be the largest organ in the body. And prior to him doing that, when we would look at cadavers, we would cut through everything, get to the organ, get to the vessel, and throw it away. You know, it was dried, desiccated. So when you look at, I encourage everybody to look at it. First of all, it's incredibly beautiful, but you realize that fascia is a hydraulic pump. It basically moves fluid at like a hydraulic pump. So the idea of moving is a way of moving fluid throughout the body, like which is it doesn't sound like anything except before that we thought the only way that fluid gets moved is via blood and lymph and through the capillary system. And then it just sort of spreads out at the end. But there is this hydraulic pump that's pumping all over. So twisting, you know, when you twist, you're moving fluid up and down your spine. When you're doing this, you're moving fluid in and out of your brain. You know, I like to say this, that's one of the reasons I believe sitting is once again, the new smoking, because we're squelching delivery of hydration to our periphery. So movement is a hydrating act. And I don't know the exact number. It's something like we are born with over 300 different movements in our body. And by the time we're 40, we only have 30, like, you know, and we all know we become stiffer as we get older, like things, you know, but I also think the fascia plays a role. We now know, body workers know this better. There's all these knots that happen and we need to keep that fascia supple and hydrated. And by moving, we can do that. So movement is, you know, move it or lose it. Yeah. You know, there's all these simple things that we kind of knew. I like the other one is, you got to move your joints to lubricate them. Yeah. Now we really understand why we've all known it, common sense again, but now we really understand why. Mm.
Are there any particular fascia health things you do aside from drinking more water and moving?
Just the other day, I was like, I've never tried one of those fascia blasters. I've never tried one. I have like a bar I use, like it's like a massage bar. So it's hard and it has these like clay sort of things on it and you roll it. So I do that. I dry brush, I skin brush, a little vigorously all the time. I keep it in my shower. But it's interesting. I do want to try the fascia blaster. I think it's controversial because I've had people like, oh, you're going to bruise, you're going to blah, blah, blah. But it's interesting. The other day I was feeling my legs and I was like, oh, what is that? Is that a little knot in my fascia? So I thought about it, but yeah, I think rolling, foam rolling is really good. And people know when you first do it, if you have never done it, it's painful. Yeah. It's so painful because you're breaking up that fascia. And then once you do it for a little while, it's like, oh, it becomes easier and easier. So I do think some of those fascia things are important to do, but I feel strongly about this. If you're moving, doing micro movements, you're hydrating, you may not need to do any of that stuff. You know, the reason I say maybe is because there's all kinds of other things that sort of play into that. There's hormones play a role. There's all kinds of reasons why people may have some other sort of issue, food sensitivities, even, you know, there's like my mind is sort of going all over the place of where, you know, why people could have sort of stiffness. And there are some other things, but I start here, you know, start with hydration and movement, simple stuff. One of my other morning routines is before I even get out of bed, I move all over. So I'm doing ankle swirls. I'm bending my knees. I'm doing like this. I'm twisting in bed. I'm stretching. Even when I'm walking in the street, like I'm walking my dog, I'll lift my legs up a little higher. I'll sort of do weird kind of movements just to sort of move around and get those movements in, like make it fun, make it easy.
Is there somewhere like a program or guide that you use to figure out which of these small little goofy movements to do?
There's some books on fascia and movements. Physical therapists know better than you know, body workers, PT yeah. people, they know better than anybody. But no, I mean, once again, I would do what feels, you know, a little uncomfortable as far as just in the morning, like, you know, and then try to make it bigger and wider, you know, ankle swirls, bending your toes. Like sometimes like your toes are stiff. Like, you know, I'm 55. So like, you know, like I'm starting to feel some stiffness things, you know, and I can't believe it because you forget to move them. You know, like right now I just my toes. I was like, oh, you know what? I haven't done that in a while. Let me squeeze my toes a little bit.
After you said that, that's exactly what I was doing.
Well, I love this because when I give this lecture, I look out and people are like, everybody's like jiggling and moving. And, you know, we didn't even talk about like fidgeting studies. People who fidget live longer. You know, there's some interesting, we have those studies in the book. People, they've actually done studies where they've fidgeted one leg versus one leg they kept still. And they did biopsies of the leg that they fidgeted and they showed that the vessels are healthier. It always leads me back to think about kids in classrooms and how we stifle them to stop moving in their seat. It's a real problem. Let them get up, let them go outside, go to the water fountain, go get a drink, come back and sit down. There's actually been some pilot studies to show that those kids do better when you let them hydrate, move around instead of stifling them in their seats. And
unfortunate that we drill that out of them at a young age.
I know. Yeah. So it's at this point that everybody's fidgeting in their seats and it's fun to see.
Yeah. I want to circle back now to some of the boots on the streets, what people can do, what foods should be stocking up on to make sure they're getting hydration, not only from their water, but from what they ingest as well.
Yeah. So we talked about vegetables, like play around with it, buy different kinds of greens, like, you know, Swiss chard and, you know, kale and just spinach and play around with different dandelion greens. Some are bitter. Microgreens are really have such a punch of nutrition in them. I also like to talk about pits and peels of certain fruits and stuff. So think about strawberries. I only learned this a few years ago. Like somebody said, why don't you eat the green on the strawberry? And I was like, I don't know. And I ate it. And I was like, it tastes good. Like I ate the whole strawberry and it tastes really good. I thought it was going to be bitter and nasty and it's not. And there's so much nutrient in that part of the strawberry. And then like watermelon, if you're eating watermelon, eat some of the white, try to get as close to the rind. That's where the nutrients are packed. The star of the show in the book are chia seeds. Chia seeds are an incredible seed. So they're loaded with parent omega-3 fatty acids. They're loaded with fiber. And then anybody who's ever made a chia pudding, it forms this gel around it that's loaded with gel water. So it's incredibly hydrating, incredibly good for you from a cellular and a fat standpoint. And then the fiber that it gives as well. It really is a superfood. It checks off all the boxes. The one thing I will say about chia seeds is some people can't tolerate them unless you soak them overnight.
How does that work? Because I've read the same thing that you should soak them, but if you soak them and then try and use them and dump out the water or something, you're going to lose the gelatinous.
No. You soak them overnight and then you just, with a spoon them into, you know, you're just, yeah, you don't have to get rid of it becomes like a pudding, you know? So that soaking, it gets rid of those lectins. It breaks up those lectins. Chia pudding is such a great dessert. That's a total easy cheat in your diet. Make a chia pudding with coconut milk or something like that and some blueberries. You can even throw some shaved almonds on there afterwards, a little bit of honey or monk fruit or whatever sweetener if you want in there. It's a phenomenal, phenomenal dessert for somebody who has a sweet tooth. And there's thousands of recipes online for different kinds of chia puddings. You can play around, put cinnamon and almost like a rice pudding, you know.
I use that one all the time.
Yeah. So chia seeds, flax seeds, those are important things. And flax seeds, you could just grind up. And actually, if you grind chia seeds, you're getting more surface area. So you can grind chia seeds. Sometimes I just throw chia seeds in my smoothie and drink it right down. But for people who have stomach issues, they may need to soak it. Healthy fats are really important from a cellular level. So avocado, you talked about, olive oil, even some lean proteins, fish, you know, we need a little bit of fish. I hate to say it, and I hope I don't sound like I'm coming off as so annoying, and I don't mean to be, but I think we all need to be reminded of it. Yeah. You know, I think if we all were reminded of it, it doesn't have to be that hard. We don't all have to go on a carnivore diet in order to be well and healthy. You know, this may take a little longer, but I think that the truth is when you question somebody who is not feeling well or who is sick and nobody can find the reason why, they don't eat well. They don't do it right. And bring it back to basics. Start with hydration, good food, sleeping. You know, I can't tell you how many people say like, I've tried everything, all of the things I've tried to say, you haven't. You really haven't. Cut off your blue screens a few hours before bed, like wind down, do some meditation. We can all improve when given those tools and being reminded that we need to do that.
What you said earlier about winter being dehydrating and dry, and then also just a minute ago with healthy fats also being hydrated, coincides nicely with ancient Ayurvedic wisdom. Why is it that fats are hydrating?
So first of all, Dr. Pollack has done research on things like ghee and chia and avocado and all those things. And they are loaded with gel water. So they are loaded with structured water. So once for first sort of, you know, low hanging fruit, you are eating more structured water when you're eating things like chia seeds and aloe and those kind of things. But the real thing is that we have a whole chapter in the book on fats. And honestly, it's because it's such an interest to me that I put it in there, because we all really need to know from a cellular level, if your cells aren't healthy, then you're not going to get any hydration in and out of your cells. So the cellular membrane is lined with fat. There are these pores of how water gets through our cells, and they're called aquaporins. They're lined with good, healthy fat. If we're not eating the right fat, and we're eating trans fats and bad fats and too much of bad fats, like I actually think we have demonized saturated fats too much. So I'm not, you know, but there is still people who are eating way too much saturated fats and not enough good and healthy fats, that your cells are not going to be healthy. And then they're going to die and you're not going to have any hydration. So it's more from a cellular, healthy cellular standpoint, the membrane of the cell, but then like you're eating fats to be hydrated. It's while you are getting some gel water in that fat, it's more from the cellular standpoint.
And the example you used is camels, how their humps aren't actually filled with water, but fat, and how that works.
That was mind blowing to me when I found that out. I was like, whoa, you know, we all thought it's water. That's why they can roam the deserts. But when those humps are not water, they're fat, which was interesting. Yeah, I know. So yeah, I would love to see that being studied more, and why camels can go so long. I assume that has so much to do with it, but that was really mind blowing to me.
Dr. Cohen, let's start to wrap this one up, but if people are interested in connecting with you or working with you, how do they go about finding you?
My website is best. So it's www.drdanacohen.com. So it's drdanacohen.com. You can follow me on Instagram at drdanacohen, C-O-H-E-N. Yeah.
And your book, Quench, is, I'm guessing, on all the major bookstores?
Yeah, everywhere you can buy books, it's there. I'm not so sure. Yeah, online is probably best.
Yeah, easiest.
Yeah.
Or if you have the option, you can support a local bookstore, but that's not always possible.
Ask them to order it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been out for a while. It's been out for a couple of years now. It still has legs because people still want to talk about this. When I first then told Gina, let's write this book, and I wanted to dive into the research, I was like, oh my God, what did I get myself into? This is way more complicated than I ever thought. Meaning that H2O molecule, you know, I'm not a researcher, I'm a clinician, and it was very complicated. And we really, really had to pull back and really make it understandable and digestible. And, but still not a lot has come out on water, even the physiology of water. You know, a few things here and there. The one thing that was interesting to me about a year ago, and this goes with everything, there was a study that came out in the journal Medical Hypothesis, which a lot of what I say is hypothesizing, right? When I tell you something's clinical, it's a hypothesis. And the article was a bunch of Harvard Joslin diabetes people got together and came up with the conclusion that hydration status in the weeks before getting COVID increases your chances of survival, or being low-grade dehydrated when you get COVID increases your risks of dying from COVID. So yeah, really interesting.
For something so ubiquitous, it's incredible how little attention it's got scientifically and medically.
Yeah, I know. And that's why, so the book is still around, even though it's a couple of years old. The only book really before this on hydration was written over 25 years ago by, we call him Dr. Batman. It's about Manjalij. He wrote a book, Your Body's Many Cries for Water.
Yes.
Yeah, great book. Interesting. But he didn't have the research of the new form of water that's now understood. Yeah.
Dr. Cohen, what three teachers have had the biggest impact on your life and work?
Okay, so the first would have to be Dr. Robert Atkins, Bob Atkins. You know, going to work for him changed my life. I was never really particularly interested in this kind of medicine, didn't know any better, didn't come from a particularly healthy family, and he changed my life. He changed the way I think about medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman is one of my mentors. I used to work for him years ago, and he's become sort of my go-to person. He has a great podcast also on holistic medicine, and he's a great doctor. And then the other is, I think Peter Attia is my new sort of favorite person. I love He is so eloquent. He's so much more eloquent than I could ever be. And I love, you know, he is grounded in medicine and science, and yet practices the art of medicine. There is an art there. And I just, I'd have to say those three are some, my current sort of heroes.
Okay. We'll do a quick rapid fire round now.
Okay.
What are the biggest myths around hydration?
I think the biggest myth is that you can't overhydrate. I think you can overhydrate with water. You know, people say like, oh, it's so rare that somebody dies in a marathon from being overhydrated. Yes, while that's true, I see on a weekly basis people who have blood abnormalities because they drink so much water, meaning their sodium and their chloride are too low because they're drinking a boatload of water.
Yeah. Water that hasn't had minerals reintroduced.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. We can overhydrate, and I see it often. I think the other thing is that you need to do the gallon challenge or drink 8 glasses of water a day to be hydrated. That's not true. I said it earlier. Some people need only 1 glass of water a day if it's good water, you know. Those are the two big ones that hydration come to mind.
What's been your favorite purchase of $500 or less that's had a disproportionate effect on your life?
I love my Aqua filter, my reverse osmosis over-the-counter water filter. I love that.
Is that the Aqua True?
Aqua True, yeah, yeah. I love my Beast Blender, which is a new blender. Full disclosure is that I'm in talks with him on some other things. Nothing formal, but. Truly, I love this blender. It's a personal blender. It is visually stunning. It's easy to use. It's quiet. It's called the Beast. It's great. It's not $400. It's less than $200. It's great.
Okay. Finally, what's one thing that your tribe does not know about you?
I was a punk rock kid in high school. I was, yeah. I almost quit high school to become a hairdresser. That was what I was about. And I smoked cigarettes as a kid. I was a great kid, like, you know, but I was a bit of a badass kid. And I didn't get in trouble because I could charm teachers out of, you know, everything. And I was smart. Like, thank God I got good grades. So they couldn't really hold anything against me.
Yeah. Well, that's a vital skill to have.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts today?
No, I loved that we touched upon the CSAs and the getting down to community and local stuff. I think that's really exciting for me to talk about. It's not often that it comes up.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Dana Cohen, thank you for joining me today on the Mind Body Peak Performance podcast and busting some of the myths around hydration and water.
Nick, thanks for having me. I hope it wasn't too simple for your people to hear, and I hope it maybe implanted something of use and value.
Yeah, there's definitely new stuff here. And even the simple stuff, it's good to be reminded of on occasion because it's easy to forget.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm Nick Urban here with Dr. Dana Cohen signing out from mindbodypeak.com. Have a great week and be an outlier. Thank you for tuning in to this episode. Head over to Apple Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and leave a rating. Every review helps me bring you thought-provoking guests. As always, you can find the show notes for this one at mindbodypeak.com/ and then the number of the episode. There, you can also chat with other peak performers or connect with me directly. The information depicted in this podcast is for information purposes only. Please consult your primary healthcare professional before making any lifestyle changes.